Welcome. Well, you're at home with Jim and Joy, and you're an important part of our EWTN family, and we are delighted to be with you. We certainly would love to hear from you. So send us an email with a question or a comment to jimandjoy@ewtn.com. And you can also listen to our show on podcast. Just go to EWTN Podcast Central at ewtn.com/radio/podcast. Or wherever you already listen to your podcasts. So today, we are thrilled to be welcoming back a frequent friend of our show, the best-selling author Anthony DiStefano. Now, Anthony is an author of over 30 Christian books for adults and children, and he's already hosted two EWTN television series, and he appears on many national radio and television programs. But today, he's here to speak with us about his newest book that I highly recommend, and it's called The Miracle Book. And it's a simple guide to asking for the impossible. We want you to go out to his website, anthonydistefano.com, and you can get this great book at ewtnrc.com. So if you know someone who maybe in your life or you know in church or at work, and they've been struggling with their faith, how to pray, what do I ask for? This is a beautiful book. If they're expecting a miracle, wanting a miracle, how do I go about doing that? Does God really care? There's so many things going on in the world. Does he really care about me? And can anything good come out of this time and this suffering or this trial that I'm going through? And do you have faith to believe God that no matter what happens, he's with you on this journey? And Anthony describes that extremely well throughout all the paradoxes of our faith journey and how it's supposed to draw us closer to the Lord in that.
I just think it's amazing that somebody takes on miracles and says that there's a theological way to pray that might be better than other ways to pray. The various paradoxes as you pray, the paradoxes to you, but not to our Lord. And so he really reveals a lot that's very sound, practical, but mysterious as well. Mm-hmm. And he says that he's seeing some miracles already taking place through the book and through through his prayer that he finally writes in fullness at the end of the book. May you receive the miracle that the Lord desires for you. We'll be right back. Plenty more to come. The Miracle Book. Don't go away.
Welcome back. Well, you're at home with Jim and Joy, and our guest today is Anthony DiStefano. He is the author of a wonderful book called The Miracle Book. You could go to his website, anthonydistefano.com, and you could get this book at ewtnrc.com. Well, yesterday we had a great show with Anthony, and he was unveiling many beautiful truths about the book, The Miracle Book. But Anthony, we want you briefly to just recap some of the important points that we shared about yesterday, and then we have to take off and go into all the other things we have to share about today.
Sure. What we said yesterday, that at some point in life, everybody needs a miracle. You know, it could be a financial crisis, a broken relationship, a deep spiritual trial. We all eventually face problems that are simply beyond our ability to solve, moments when we need supernatural help. And that's where this book comes in. The Miracle Book was written to help people ask God for miracles in the most effective way possible. And as you were just talking about, at the heart of this book are seven miracle paradoxes, which show that effective prayer often requires holding together two attitudes that seem to be in conflict with each other, like healthy fear and courage, or precision and openness, or persistence and decisiveness, or self-reliance and surrender. Each chapter in this book explores one of those paradoxes in depth, and the book culminates in a comprehensive miracle prayer that pulls all these insights together, offering, I hope, believers a way to pray for the extraordinary with both confidence and trust. And ultimately, I think the miracle book isn't just about getting what we want from God. It's about drawing closer to the Lord and gaining that elusive peace that transcends all understanding.
Well said. Well, Anthony, in our last show, you started to speak about these paradoxes, and you did spoken prayer versus soul prayer. It was really powerful. And why don't we do concerning the value of fear versus the need for courage? Fear versus the need for courage.
Well, yeah, and one of the questions people have is how can fear possibly be good? And you know, Mother Angelica, the great foundress of EWTN, once famously said, if God sends you tribulations, he wants you to tribulate. In other words, we're not supposed to run from fear. We're supposed to go through it with God's help and come out on the other side stronger, you know, as we all, and we all know this is true. Fear can help us to grow. It can help us to mature. It can protect us. It can focus us. It can make us sharper and keep us on our toes spiritually as well as emotionally and physically. It can prepare us and prune us. And most importantly, you know, fear can make us more reliant on God, which can consequently bring us closer to God. Now, what's always bad and what the Bible really, really warns against is anxiety. Anxiety is a chronic, heightened, extended fear and worry about the future. And this often causes a kind of a physical and spiritual paralysis that can prevent us from doing God's will. And that's a very important distinction. Fear can be good because it can make us take action and it could drive us to our knees in prayer. But anxiety is paralyzing. It leads to hopelessness and doubt and panic.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is, while God allows us and even desires that we tribulate when he sends us tribulations, he knows that it takes very little real terror to help us to grow. He knows that there's a fine distinction between the benefit we can derive from fear and the paralysis that results from anxiety. So this paradox, it really means that when God sends us or allows us to experience fear, we should thank him for it, embrace it insofar as it helps us to grow. But also at the very same time, we have to immediately pray for the courage to combat anxiety, which is paralyzing and stops us from doing the good.
That is true. Now, we also want you to tell our family about the paradox of being self-reliant, right? And then simultaneously depending on the will of God. And in your book, and I like the illustration you did, it was like a seesaw. There is this perfect balance. If we get out of whack in one way, we won't be balanced. And so explain that to our family about being self-reliant or surrendering to the will of God. How do they both work together?
You know, well, this is one of the great paradoxes of the spiritual life. On the one hand, you're expected to act. You have to go to the doctor when you're sick. You have to call your lawyer when you're in legal trouble. You have to fight injustice when you see it. You know, you have to use all your God-given talents to solve your problems. You can't just sit back and do nothing. You know, you have to fulfill your obligations and your duties in life. You can't be completely passive and expect God to do all the work, because he's not going to do it. He's going to expect you to take part in his saving work by using the talents that you've been given. But at the same time, after you've done all you can do, that's when you have to let go. That's when you have to relinquish. Okay, and that's what a lot of us have trouble doing. That's when you have to trust that whatever the outcome you're working for and praying for, it's ultimately in God's hands. You have to try to be at peace, and even if you're afraid that that things might not turn out the way you want. In other words, you have to say what Jesus said in the Garden of Gethsemane: not my will, but your will be done. So as with every paradox of faith, this is not an either or situation, it's both. To use another analogy, like a sailor who trims the sails of his boat, you know, while also letting the wind do the work, we're called to act boldly while at the same time resting completely in the Lord. Or like I said, like you just said, the seesaw, you can't put all your weight on one side and do nothing. If you put the weight on both sides, that's when it starts moving. So as St. Augustine said, pray as though everything depended on God. Work as though everything depended on you. That's the balance you're trying to achieve in the Christian life. And that's the sweet spot if I can use that expression, when it comes to obtaining miracles.
And Anthony, that is true. And I'll give a brief testimony. When I had stage 3 colon cancer, I had said to the Lord, Lord, I'm going to do this 6 months of chemo. I'm going to take all this medicine into my veins and do whatever we need to do. But at the same time, Lord, simultaneously, I'm going to receive you in daily Eucharist, and I'm going to see you as my healer. So it's not like you throw it all out to the wind and go, this is just, it's both. You have to maybe do what the doctors are saying, and that was not comfortable. It was a journey to hell and back. But at the same time, Jesus was so intimate with me. He accompanied. We were so close in that journey. And that's where you can't miss that, because God ultimately always wants to bring a greater good out of everything that we're going through, even if we're suffering. And if it's fearful, like Mother Angelica said, God, there is a tribulation. He wants you to tribulate. You got to go through it sometimes.
Yeah. And you know, the greatest example of this is Jesus Christ himself. You know, I've said this before. What's the greatest evil that ever took place in the world? The crucifixion of Christ. You know, why? Because Christ was God. So that wasn't just homicide. It wasn't just patricide. It wasn't even genocide. It was deicide, the murder of God. There could be no greater evil than that, no greater obscenity. And yet, what did God do with that? 3 days later, he brought forth the light of the resurrection. Yeah. The resurrection just wasn't a good thing. It wasn't just the raising of one person. It was the reconciliation of God with man. It was the opening up of the gates of heaven so that we could see our family again in heaven, not just as ghosts, but as real people, real flesh and blood people. That's not just a good thing. That's the greatest thing. So if God was able to pull the greatest thing out of the worst thing, then we have to have faith and trust that he could take every bad thing, even the tragic things that happen in our life, and pull some greater good out of it. And sometimes we can see it right away. Sometimes we see it 5 or 10 years later. Sometimes we won't see it till we get to heaven.
Anthony, let's do persistent faith versus decisive faith. And I just want to remind our family that we're doing this not just because they're teachings, but they're going to become part of that miracle prayer and that better way of praying and asking for miracles. So it's not just didactic teaching, that's important, but it's going to be incorporated. So decisive, persistent faith, decisive faith, the paradox.
Sure. Well, how can we be both? You know, how can we be persistent, which involves continually asking, seeking, and knocking, all of which implies a kind of uncertainty about whether God will answer us or not? Right, while also having a decisive faith, which by definition means being unwavering and confident that God is going to answer us. You know, it seems like we're being asked to do two opposite things. You put a step on the gas and the brakes at the same time. You know, in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus tells the story of the widow who pesters the unjust judge until he finally relents. Jesus tells us to imitate her. On the other hand, we're asked to believe that from the moment we've uttered our prayer, God has already heard it, and that he's known from all eternity that we would need something badly and that he would come to our rescue. So for instance, we see Jesus saying things like, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours. The question is, how do you do both at the same time? And I think the key to understanding this paradox is to understand what true faith is. And this is very important. True faith is not an emotional feeling, that we have to keep up an emotional feeling. It's not about experiencing optimism or euphoria or certainty that we're going to get what we want. Like forgiveness and love, true faith is an act of the will. It's a decision to trust God no matter what. It's choosing to place our confidence in God's goodness and power and his willingness to help us, even when our emotions are all over the place. I mean, we know our emotions fluctuate wildly like a roller coaster, but the bottom line is our faith has to be able to survive our mood. So, you know, don't try to feel faith, think faith. And keep thinking it. That's something that you can always do no matter what mood you're in. Just keep deciding to believe. That's the kind of persistence that makes us stronger and purifies us. And if you persist in this way without trying to work yourself up into an emotional, spiritual frenzy, then you'll be living out this paradox. And that's when miracles happen.
Right.
It sounds like Job, right? Even if you slay me, I love you. You know, I'm just totally yielded here. You know what I mean? That's decisive faith. Lord, it's all in your hands. Whatever the outcome, I trust in you.
Now, Anthony, quickly tell our family about specific prayers that we pray, versus being open to God's will. We have those specific prayers that we're praying. I'm praying, I'm believing, I'm wanting, but yet at the same time, being open to God's will.
Well, precision in prayer is good because it shows God we trust Him with the intimate details of our life, just as we would a close friend. Look, if your goal as a Christian is to have a personal relationship with the Lord, and that's not just something Protestants do, it's something Catholics should do, you have to share those kind of details. That's what relationship is all about, sharing. Also, when you make specific requests, we're acknowledging that God isn't just the Lord of the church we belong to. You know, He's the Lord of our families. He's the Lord of our finances. He's the Lord of our vacations. He's the Lord of our bedrooms. But at the same time that we're being precise, we simultaneously have to be open to God's will. And the reason is something we discussed yesterday, that we don't always know what's truly best for us. We don't even know what we really want, even when we're praying with great sincerity. Mm-hmm. Our desires always seem real to us, but they're always wrapped up in emotions and influenced by fear and desire and pride and pain and ambition. Mm-hmm. Openness to God's will shows that we trust God because He can see the big picture. He can see the future because He's in the future, and He wants what's best for us, not just in the moment, but forever. And when you embrace this paradox by being precise, yet radically open to God's providence, that's when all the channels of grace are opened up. And isn't that exactly the way Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane?
Yes.
And isn't that the way He was able to save humanity and open up the gates of heaven to all of us?
It's the miracle book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible, EW10RC.com. We're going to take a break at this point, and we're going to culminate with Anthony's sharing some of the most important things you need to know if you're at the end of your rope and you're desirous, you know, God, please help me, what you need to know right now. We'll be right back. Plenty more to come. Please don't go away. Welcome back. We're wrapping up our conversation with Anthony DiStefano. Anthony, a couple of things. We got about 4 minutes. First is everything seems to come to the end of the book. You tie everything together there. Why did you wait until the end to do that? And then you also mentioned a new age of miracles. You feel like we're on the cusp of that. And then we'll go on to what people need to hear most right now in terms of their desires needy of a miracle.
Sure. Well, I try to do that to make things easier for readers. The miracle prayer that I put together at the end of the book isn't just the conclusion. It's a distillation of everything that's in the book. It incorporates all the paradoxes we talked about, all the conditions that Jesus seemed to require to grant miracles into one comprehensive, theologically sound prayer, not some magic formula that you could scan and save on your smartphone and pray anytime, anywhere. I really wanted to give people something lasting, something that they can hold on to and regularly pray, even after finishing the book. Now, regarding the New Age of Miracles, well, you first have to understand the original Age of Miracles that occurred 2,000 years ago during the Apostolic Age and the Age of the Church Fathers. Back then, bona fide miracles weren't just exceptions to the rule. They happened all the time. They were a constant part of life. People were always being healed from the sick and raised from the dead, and demons were always being cast out. That's why the church was able to grow so rapidly, even in the face of terrible persecution. Now, 2,000 years later, I think we're on the verge of a new age of miracles because of very similar reasons. Christianity is being persecuted all over the globe. In the West, it's being persecuted not with lions and gladiators, but with ridicule and censorship and legal threats and the cancel culture and all that pressure and propaganda from the media and Hollywood and the academic world and the political world. You know, our beliefs are just attacked relentlessly, marriage, the family, life itself. And in this toxic environment, I think that words alone may not be enough to bring people back to the faith. We may need something more, something miraculous, and it makes perfect sense to me that God would accompany this renewed effort at evangelization during this time of persecution with a fresh wave of miracles. Mm-hmm. And that's why I tell people in this book, take advantage of this time of persecution. Just don't just ask for one miracle, ask for 5 miracles, ask for 10 miracles. Help to usher in this new age of miracles. Mm-hmm.
Anthony, we got about 2.5 minutes left here. Just speak to the people, like we said, at the end of the rope, they're in a particular situation. What do they need to know and hear and do right now?
Well, the first thing you've got to remember that you're not alone. God sees you. He's known that what you're going through, and he's known from all eternity that you would need a miracle at this moment and that you'd be tuning in to Jim and Joy's program. So keeping that in mind, I'd say there's four things you need to do. There's more than four, but the four most important things are, whenever you're experiencing anxiety, you got to take a breath, try to be calm. As the Psalms say, be still and know that I am God. Try to put your emotions aside for a moment. Don't feel faith, think faith. Faith is the most important biblical requirement for a miracle, but instead of getting all worked up about it, make a decisive act of the will to trust God. Say with St. Faustina, Jesus, I trust in you. Jesus, I trust in you. And you. Second, you have to make a definite decision to be sorry for all the sins you've ever committed and resolve to become a better, holier person. Listen, Jesus Christ said, if you want to gain your life, you have to first lose it. In the Bible, Jesus was always concerned about the inner person more than the outer person. His miracles were always a sign of the transformation of a person's soul. So if you need a miracle right now, you got to make a real effort to clear the deck spiritually. Ask God's forgiveness. Be willing to change. That's what God wants most. So do it. Next, as we said before, be radically open to God's will. Tell him exactly what you want. Be clear and precise. But then echo the words of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but your will be done. Mm. That's the model for all miracle prayers. That kind of surrender isn't weakness. Mm. It's spiritual power. And finally, and I'm skipping things like, you know, the intercession of the saints and asking for Our Lady's help. But I'll say this is the final important thing. When you pray for a specific miracle, be sure, and Joy said this before the break, be sure to pray for God's glory too. That's so important. In other words, ask God to use your miracle to deepen the faith of the people around you, to make them realize that God is responsible for the great blessing you're receiving, not you. When you seek God's glory in your prayers, you acknowledge that your request isn't just about selfish desires, but about spreading the faith to everyone. Yeah. And this reflects not only a humble disposition, but a mature faith, and one that I think is more worthy and deserving of a miracle.
Anthony, thank you so much for this gift, the Miracle Book, A Simple Guide to Asking for the Impossible. Have no anxiety about anything, but in everything, by prayer, supplication, and thanksgiving, make your request known to God. Mm. And then the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds, your bodies in Christ Jesus, the Lord. You're an important part of this family. You're never alone. You're always at home with Jim and Joy. Bye now.